almond butter and pie.
I can't eat peanut butter.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Also, that makes zero sense.
Even if you could eat peanut butter, would you be putting it on pie? I don't know.
I would put it in pie. Look.
Okay. Peanut butter and chocolate? Peanut butter pie. When you say and, it makes me think you're like spreading it on top of the pie, and that's like a bridge too far even for me. And I'm a guy who puts Jägermeister in eggnog. I also don't. That reminds me. I have done that, but I don't recommend. Welcome to episode number 58 of The Memory Jar. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Prestwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm finally enjoying autumnal colors, and due to the news, I'm in kind of a nostalgic mood to the last good autumn we all had.
When was the last good autumn we all had? I cannot remember one.
To be honest, I think it was when Kaladesh was released, so 2016? And hey look! Kaladesh is just on Arena.
Wow, that was an impressive segue. I did not see that coming. Well, that is what we're talking about today, so you're right on that front. We're going to dive into the Kaladesh block a little bit, talk about energy and servos and various planar bridges. But before we do that, like we always do, let's crack open the memory jar. Okay, this week's card is an oldie, originally printed in Stronghold in 1998, but this is the Dual Decks Merfolk versus Goblins version. This is Tidal Warrior. It's a single blue mana for a 1/1 Merfolk Warrior, and it says tap, target land becomes an island until end of turn.
That's it?
Yeah. So you can make a land an island. You could just like Spreading Seas a thing, I guess, but just until end of turn.
Yeah, this works really well flavorfully because a lot of the Merfolk Lords give their other Merfolk Island Walk. So the idea is it's a dorky Merfolk, but you can tap to make all your creatures unblockable, essentially.
Okay, that makes sense. I was wondering if Stronghold had some kind of land type matters theme that I didn't know about. But I guess if this is designed to be played with your Lords of Atlantis and all those other guys, then that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, old Magic sets, listeners, if you ever go back and like look through the card file, they're not as unified. It's kind of like jazz, where you're going to see cards that are on theme, and they all work together, but then randomly you'll be like, oh, what's Ensnaring Bridge doing in the file? That makes no sense. Or like, huh, there's this cool black-white legend. Why is that here? I don't know. Because, you know, they just had to put stuff in there. They had a lot of cards to fill, so.
Yeah, they had an idea for a card, and they just jammed it in a set without any thoughts about synergy. I do want to talk about dual decks for a sec. They haven't been doing dual decks, and it's kind of too bad because dual decks were pretty sweet.
They were. Yeah, they spanned for about 12 years, if I remember correctly. A little over a decade. But yeah, it was just cool little casual intro decks, right? You could do Goblins versus Elves. You could do Phyrexian versus Coalition. But there's these great reprint sets that also were fun to play. I mean, to be honest, I only bought one. It was a Japanese Jace versus Chandra. And I actually didn't play it. I just wanted to play with the Jace and the Chandras. So
sure.
I'm not the best person to talk about this product.
I have a friend who has all of the dual decks and has sleeved them up and has them in a 5-row white box. And when you want to play, you sit down, you roll a die to determine the left to right, and then you roll another die to determine the north-south, and that's your dual deck. Then you do it again, and you pick your opponent's dual deck, and then you just battle your random dual decks. So a different kind of battle box.
That's pretty awesome. I have an interesting trivia question for you. Tidal Warrior turns a land into an island until the end of turn. There are a handful of cards that can turn lands islands until the end of turn. The most recent one that was printed in a standard legal set was Sealock Monster from Theros. But here's a more important question. Have all of these cards been blue?
No. And I don't know how many non-blue cards there have been. But there's one card I know of that's red that does this. And I don't remember the creature type, but I know Tundra is in the name because it can turn a land into an island or a plains. And I thought that was super sweet. Like, a reference to Tundra, the dual land.
Exactly. That's absolutely correct. This was a card from Apocalypse. It's a common from Apocalypse. It's Tundra Kavu. It was red. It was a 2/2. But yeah, it was able to turn a land into a plains or an island until end of turn. And
did that matter in that block? Or is this just another random, hey, we had an idea for this thing?
So that actually did matter. So one of the better cards in Invasion block draft was there was a blue common whose name escapes me, but it turned a land into a basic land type of your choice until end of turn. So it helped with fixing.
Sure. Because
there's a lot of gold, there's a lot of like domain mattered, so you wanted to be able to cast stuff with different colors in the set. And so it was important to be able to change land types. And if I remember correctly, there over a few of the colors, since it was kind of an apocalypse, this was the last set drafted in that original Invasion Planeshift Apocalypse draft format. And so it wasn't common, no pun intended, but like it was an important thing to have, you know.
I had not considered using it to turn one of your lands into a tundra for fixing purposes, basically. That's interesting. I was thinking, you know, is there something where you're destroying one of each land type, like a Sundering Titan type thing or whatever, but that makes a ton more sense. Fascinating. Yeah. Wait, is that the only non-blue make an island card?
It is. It is the only one. You got it right. Okay. Everything else has been blue, and we're sticking to it.
Wow. Fascinating. So that's a long way from Tidal Warrior, but... people love Merfolk, man. You know, I'm sorry to disappoint those people. We're going to go to a place that didn't have any Merfolk, Kaladesh, to be precise. So, Christian, give us a little background on Kaladesh.
Sure. So, Kaladesh is a plane where instead of magic, people use the aether, like energy, essentially, to craft machines and cast spells that awfully look like magic. It's a steampunk-inspired plane, partially based on a Southwest Asian motif. And it was kind of their excuse to have the first artifact block since Mirrodin was printed.
Yeah, on that front, friend of the show Shivan Bhatt wrote a couple of open letters or essays on Kaladesh, and I think they're worth reading, so I'll link to them in the show notes. One is called Kaladesh, You Break My Heart, and one is called On Chandra, Colonialism, and Race. And he criticized the art direction, and I'm going to paraphrase and way oversimplify this here, but he criticized the art direction for using Indian visuals as kind of a window dressing for what was a steampunk set, rather than something a little more foundational. And whether or not you agree or disagree with that, I think it's worth reading. He's an excellent writer and a really thoughtful guy, and so I highly recommend you check those out. Art direction aside, I think it's worth talking about what the mechanics are, because they are really artifact-based. So Kaladesh introduced vehicles, fabricate, and energy in the first set. So vehicles were artifacts that could become creatures if you crewed them with other creatures. Each vehicle has a crew cost that's equal to the amount of power needed to use the vehicle. So, for example, if something has crew 3, you would need 3 total power of creatures. You tap those creatures, and then it becomes a creature itself and can attack or block or do whatever.
Right. It was mechanically showing you had a bunch of, you know, creatures hop into a vehicle, man it to crew it, and it did its own thing.
Huge flavor fail. I assumed that if a vehicle was destroyed, the creatures that crewed it would also be destroyed.
Because
they're in the vehicle. But apparently they just pop out and they're fine.
Apparently, Kaladesh was the only plane to have listened to Ralph Nader and actually have safety precautions in vehicles. So, radical. Like, we never... didn't really talk about that. We should talk about who the Kaladesh Ralph Nader is, essentially.
Passenger side airbags in every airship.
Right. Here's the weird thing, too. So, you could crew vehicles with other vehicles that have been crewed.
Mm-hmm.
So how weird is that, where you have your friends jump on like a smuggler's copter, which we'll talk about later, and then they're like, no, this helicopter is going to jump into a dreadnought, and then we're going to be in this helicopter piloting the helicopter that's piloting the dreadnought. Like, what?
Yeah. I definitely have crewed a train with another train.
Yeah. Choo-choo.
It's trains all the way down, baby.
Choo-choo.
All right, what's next?
So another mechanic was Fabricate. This was if vehicles were like the flashy, like, whoa, this is something new we're doing, Fabricate was kind of the glue that held a lot of this stuff together. It was mechanic and creatures that let you choose whether to put a number of +1/+1 counters on that creature when it entered the battlefield, or you created a number of servos equal to the Fabricate number. So a creature with Fabricate 1 meant it could come into play with a +1/+1 counter, or you could create a 1-1 servo when it entered the battlefield.
Yeah, this was a mechanic primarily for limited purposes. There were a couple cards that showed up and constructed, but I think of Glintsleeve Artisan, which was 2 and a white for a 2-2 with Fabricate 1. So you could either have a 2 and a white 3-3, which is totally fine at limited rate, or a 2-2 and a 1-1.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of flexibility there, just like little decision points when you're playing your basic common creatures. I thought it was really cool for that reason.
Honestly, I hope they bring it back, and I hope they can figure out, maybe they have to reskin it, because I really love the flexibility. As you said, there's little decision points, but it really help that both sides actually made a difference, you know?
Yep.
I really wish they'd bring it back. Maybe they bring it back in core sets or something. But it really, it helped the limited format along a ton by having this in, yeah, in the set.
Yep. The last one from the original Kalidos set was Energy. Energy was a new resource generated by spells that paid for costs on other spells and on creatures. So Whirler Virtuoso is a great example. It was a creature that entered the battlefield and it generated 3 energy. And then it could also spend 3 energy to create a 1/1 flying Thopter creature token. So energy is interesting because it's a resource that stays with the player, not with cards in play. So it's not like regular counters. And that, my friends, is playing with fire.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in depth in a little bit. But in Aether Revolt, it introduced 2 new mechanics. Granted, there are only 2 sets in this block, so there's 5 unique mechanics over 2 sets. So they introduced Improvise and Revolt. Improvise is basically Artifact Convoke, which we've talked about previously on this podcast. But Convoke was a mechanic that made spells cheaper by tapping creatures. So Improvise does the same, but you use artifacts instead. And it only reduced the generic cost. You couldn't tap a colored artifact, like an artifact that was also blue, couldn't reduce the cost by 1 blue. It only reduced it by 1 generic. So for a card example, there's a card like Sweatworth Brawler. It's a 3/3 creature with Improvise and Menace that costed 3 and a red. So you could pay a full 3 and a red to cast it, or you could tap up to 3 artifacts to reduce its cost. And if you tapped all 3, it only cost 1 red mana to play.
And then the last one in Aether Revolt was Revolt. So Revolt was a trigger that did a thing if a permanent you controlled had left the battlefield before you played the card or, you know, had the card in play. So this is like a death trigger, but it's larger. So if you blink a creature or, you know, one of your permanents is exiled or you return it to your hand, you know, sacrifice a fetch land, any of these things, that gives the card Revolt and you get what is basically a kicker-like effect.
Yes, or it triggered, there's some enchantments that triggered if you had Revolt, for example. Like at the end of turn, if you'd had Revolt triggered at some point during the turn, it would have an effect.
Absolutely. Of these last two, Improvise only appeared on blue, black, red, and artifact cards, so no white or green. And Revolt was only white, black, or green cards, so skipping out on the blue or red where Improvise was kind of the primary color. So yeah, kind of interesting. 5 brand new mechanics in this little 2-set block.
Whew, let me tell you, there's a lot to discuss. Where do we start with this? What do you think had the biggest impact in the immediate sense or in Magic? Like, where do we want to start?
As I mentioned, when you create a new resource, you are in the danger zone. You are playing with fire.
Yes.
And a resource that is attached to the player and not cards that is very difficult to remove unless you can remove counters from a player makes it even more dangerous because you just can't interact with that the same way you can interact with other permanents on the battlefield. So I think it's worth talking about some of the critical cards that dealt with energy.
I remember reading with the article that Marmorow introduced it. He'd been trying since Tempest to have energy happen, and it finally happened, and it was an abject disaster. So maybe we should not... Maybe there's a reason people were pushing it off. But let's start with Aether Revolt's Marvel. This is the most broken energy card they released, right?
Yeah, this was the biggest payoff. So this one was 4 mana for a legendary artifact. It had the text, whenever a permanent you control is put into a graveyard, you get an energy counter. And then you could tap it, pay 6 energy, and look at the top 6 cards of your library. You could cast a card from among them without paying its mana cost and put the rest on the bottom in random order. So this had a bunch of things going for it. 1, there were a lot of great enablers, which we'll talk about in a sec. 2, you had Giant Eldrazi you could put into play with this because it was not long after the Battle for Zendikar block. And 3, it allows you to cast the card. You did not put it onto the battlefield. You were casting it. So, for example, with the Giant Ulamog, it had a cast trigger that let you exile 2 permanents. You know, you spin the wheel, you get the Ulamog, you get the huge 10/10 that mills half your opponent's library, and you're exiling permanents. This card had to be banned.
Yes. And here's the other thing. It only costs 4 to play. So this came into play relatively early. As we're going to talk about in a second, almost every energy card that you could spend energy on also generated energy, which was probably a design mistake. And yeah, I mean, there was also Imrakul the Promised End. You could, on turn 4, take control of your opponent's turn, and then you're left with a 13/13 flyer that's going to cause shenanigans. Like,
Yeah. It was a lot. So energy was really the beginning of cards that were too powerful for standard and needing to be banned. And this was the first shot across the bat.
Right. And I think what helps, let's talk about some of the supporting cards, right? You had cards like Attune with Aether that were high, that were heavily played. It's one green for a sorcery. You search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library, and you also get two energy. So Lay of the Land, which is a card they first printed in Apocalypse, but you also got an additional resource on top.
Yeah, another one, Rogue Refiner. One green, blue for a 3-2. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, and then you also get two energy. So I think there are a lot of formats where one green, blue for a 3-2 draw card is already an incredibly good rate to replace itself and a meaningful body, but you get two energy, and it's like you're just getting this energy for free, and you're replacing the card. So this was another card that had to be banned.
Yes, Attune with Aether was banned. It was banned much later because energy was still too good after they banned Aetherworks Marvel. I tried to play it at a GP before it got banned. That was how good it was. You just couldn't ignore it. And that's the problem, is that when this was legal, they described this card, as Attune with Aether and Rogue Refiner, as like Dark Ritual, and then, you know, Dark Ritual with a body, essentially. It was just too good. Like, and a lot of the problem was with numbers. Aetherworks Marvel shouldn't have been 6. That's a little too easy by turn 4. Attune with Aether shouldn't have added 2 energy. Rogue Refiner should definitely not have added any energy, but, well, you know. And the other, and honestly, the problem is, as you said, energy was uninteractable. Like, there was no way to remove an energy from an opponent. So if you can't interact with it and it just sits there, it's, there are games where it have 28 energy just waiting for a payoff. And it's like, why would I be able, should I be able to create 9 Thopters the moment one card comes into play, right? Or 10, I should say. Like,
there were plenty of interesting cards that just became so powerful because the energy was free. I think of Long Tusk Cub, which was an uncommon one and a green for a 2-2 cat. And when it dealt combat damage to a player, you would get 2 energy. So it had a way to generate energy if you were getting in. But you could also pay 2 energy to put a +1/+1 counter on it. So a ton of games went, turn 1 Attune, get your 2 energy. Turn 2 Long Tusk Cub. Now that's basically a 3-3. It's probably attacking and getting in, assuming your opponent is playing a 2-drop, or they're just throwing their 2-drop away, then it's generating more energy and you get out of control. There were very huge Long Tusk Cubs running around until Attune was banned.
Right. And there's also cards like Servant of the Conduit, which is one in green for a 2-2. Why there are a lot of 2-2 bears that did more stuff, who knows? But this one entered the battlefield with 2 energy, but you could also pay energy to add a mana of any color to your mana pool. So it was also fixing. It worked well with Long Tusk Cub. It worked well with all the other energy payoffs. And it ramped.
So some of the cards were a little out of control. You got a little too much energy. I really liked Energy Unlimited, where it was not particularly broken. There were a lot of interesting things you could do with it. The gameplay was fun. You know, too powerful for Constructed, even though energy only existed in this one tiny block.
And I will say, to be fair to Energy, it was a lot. It's a lot more fair when there's a much larger card pool to work with. Like, energy has not been a thing in Modern. It's a thing right now in Historic on Arena, because who the hell knows what's legal in Arena, and they don't really have a big card pool in Arena to deal with cards anyway. So that's a victim of a smaller card pool problem. But it wasn't a thing in Pioneer. Like, there weren't energy decks running around. It's just one of those things. It's a really weird parasitic mechanic. They probably can't do it again, because if they add more energy cards, it might be too good for Eternal formats, and it just wasn't very fun.
I think similarly, it's worth talking about vehicles. And vehicles being new in Kaladesh, they made the same mistake that they did with equipment, and the first go-around was too powerful. So I think the critical example of that is Smuggler's Copter. Smuggler's Copter is 2 mana for a vehicle that, once it's crewed, it's a 3-3. It has flying. And when it attacks or blocks, you can draw a card, and if you do, discard a card. And it had crew 1. So you can see, again, we're pushing it really hard. 2 mana for basically a 3-3 flyer is a very good rate. Crew 1 is absurd. Any servo, any, you know, little 1 mana, anything can crew it. And then you draw a card when it attacks or blocks. So on offense, on defense, also, that's an attack trigger, not a combat damage trigger. So you were just always looting. There's a reason that this card is banned in Pioneer, and they didn't even bother putting it in Kaladesh Remastered.
No, it's too efficient. It's the Skull Clamp of vehicles, right? This was banned faster than Aetherworks Marvel. And when it came out, it was a Smuggler's Copter meta in Standard and in casual play. It was just too good, right? It was just, it's just so easy to identify how good it was. And Wizards of the Coast recognized it was too good too quickly, and they banned it pretty early in the format, and then they left, you know, busted energy cards. But it, to be fair, this was the only busted vehicle in, well, the only vehicle that got banned, I should say. I should preface in the original Kaladesh box, but it was, it should, I don't know how you fix it. Maybe make it cost 4 mana or something, but it was just too powerful.
I mean, it could be a 2/3 or a 2/2, or it could have been a combat damage trigger. The crew cost could have been higher. I mean, really, it's one of those situations where I know they want people to play with it, but like any tweak to the card would be reasonable. This for me is a pretty common first pick in cubes, mm-hmm. right? It's just, you stay open because it's colorless, but it just does whatever you need it to do.
And we're talking like vintage cubes too. This is so good. And the other thing too, the way vehicles work is they're only creatures until the end of turn. So this could attack, not get hit with a board wipe, not have interaction with like Path to Exile or Fatal Push or something like that for a turn. And it just, it forced your opponent to play around it and not around your opponent. Like,
I think the other premier vehicle was Heart of Kirin. Mm-hmm. Heart of Kirin was 2 mana for a 4/4 flying vigilance vehicle, mythic. So this one had crew 3, which made it a lot more difficult to crew, but you could also remove a loyalty counter from a planeswalker you controlled rather than pay its crew cost. So with planeswalkers that generated high loyalty, you could activate this both on offense and defense if you wanted to, and just a very powerful card that was cheap. Not nearly as powerful as Smuggler's Copter just because of the crew cost, but really excellent.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, this was played when Gideon Allies and Nekar was legal, so there's a lot of... You're nodding, because you start with Toolcraft Exemplar, you then play Heart of Kirin, and then turn 3 you do, who cares what you do turn 3. Turn 4 you have a Gideon, and now you're hitting for a bajillion damage, you have a Gideon in play, you've made a knight. Like, it was very efficient. Very good. And not much more to say. Like, it was just dumb.
Yeah. They even made a limited mistake.
Yes.
There's a card called Renegade Freighter, which is, it was 3 mana for a 4/3 vehicle with crew 2, which doesn't sound crazy, but whenever it attacked, it got +1/+1 and trample until end of turn. So it's like you're just constantly attacking with a 5/4 trample. Yes. And again, another card where they were like, we're not putting this in Kaladesh Remastered because it will kind of ruin the limited format. I took a lot of these first in packs with very powerful cards.
Oh, so it's funny. I've played a little bit of Kaladesh Remastered, and then I remembered I was not as good at it because Renegade Freighter wasn't in the packs. And it also is interesting because I realized a lot of the cards that I picked would first pick because they were 2/2s. They're like, they were bears.
Mm-hmm.
A lot worse than Renegade Freighter. It was like, oh yeah, I don't need to curve into my 5/4, you know, vehicle after this. Like, these cards are just not good at all.
So all in all, vehicles are interesting because they're still around.
Mm-hmm.
We're still getting new vehicles in sets. And sometimes they're fine, sometimes they're bad, but they haven't done the Kaladesh thing and made them just all incredible. They're not constructed playable cards these days.
Yeah, and they really learn from their mistakes. Like, it's one of those things, it's good that they pushed it a little too hard at first to see like what that upper range is, and then they've settled. It's like, it's again, like when original equipment was released, they had Skullclamp. The block after they had Umazov's Jitte, and then they're like, okay, we now know how to make really good equipment that also isn't going to break the game, right?
Yeah. We're just not there here. We went from Smuggler's Copter to Silent Submersible, and I'm not even going to tell you what that card does. Just know that no one has ever put it in their deck and won a game while it's on the battlefield, I'm pretty sure.
I still have
five. It's never happened.
I got to burn them. They're so bad. Yeah. I don't want to live in a world where Silent Submersible is good.
You got to cleanse your collection of that negative energy, bro.
So I will say one last thing before we go. We talked about vehicles and equipment. And the other thing is, that was a lesson learned. But it was a lesson learned Wizards R&D should have known. Like, we all know how broken equipment was and when it was first introduced. I'm a little disappointed because energy is the same thing, right? Like, they have a lot of lessons that you have a lot of free resources. They make games on fun, and it ties to like Urza Saga block. They had a lot of fast mana, and they don't make cards like that anymore because it was broken. But they decided to kind of do it just not with mana, but with another resource, and it broke Magic again. Like, I just don't. It's just a weird thing to not learn that lesson, right? Like, I don't know what happened in development, but it was really disappointing.
Hard. It's hard to tell. I mean, equipment, energy, vehicles are all things where they went too far right away. And somehow it's amazing they didn't go too far right away with planeswalkers, that the first planeswalkers were just, like, fine. And so we'll have to see what the next card type or the next, you know, interesting mechanic is and see if they handle it right the first time.
Oh, I was going to say they didn't do it with a companion, so I was going to throw that up. I don't know.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Companions companions did have their issues. All right. So, come on, R&D. Keep trying. Keep trying. You'll get there.
Keep trying.
All right. Okay. So we've talked about busted mechanics. So mechanics aside, let's just run through some notable cards in Kaladesh Block.
Yeah. So let's start off with a very infamous pair. They have to be a pair. Felidar Guardian and Saheeli Rai. So Felidar Guardian was 3 and a white for a 1/4 cat beast. And when it entered the battlefield, you could exile another target permanent you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. Cool blink stuff. Really cool blink stuff. And when you pair it with Saheeli Rai, it's a 1 blue and a red planeswalker. Comes into play with 3 loyalty. The +1, you could scry 1, and Saheeli Rai deals 1 damage to each opponent. Here's where it gets tricky with Felidar Guardian. You could pay 2 loyalty to create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. That token gains haste. Exile at the beginning of the next end step. And technically, Saheeli Rai had an ultimate, which is -7. Search your library for up to 3 artifact cards with different names. Put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. I've never seen anyone use the ultimate. Everyone uses -2 ability with Felidar Guardian to create an infinite number of Felidar Guardians.
Yes. So the way that works is your Felidar Guardian comes into play. You can blink Saheeli Rai. That comes into play. You copy with the -2 the Felidar Guardian. The new Felidar Guardian comes in, blinks the Saheeli Rai, comes into play, and you just keep doing that until you have all your hasty Felidar Guardians. A lot of people talk about, oh yeah, haha, this 2-card combo is Splinter Twin. This is like legitimately Splinter Twin.
Yes. So I have a funny story. I went to GP Louisville, which was the weekend right after the Aether Revolt full spoiler set dropped. I was there on Friday looking at the vendors, and I remember being like, oh, I've always wanted to get Saheeli Rai. I should get it, but I'll wait until the end of the weekend because there's no way it's going to suddenly jump and sell out. Like, it's a dinky planeswalker. It's just cool. I want to try playing with it. And then by the end of Friday, they were sold out everywhere, and whatever copies were left were now being sold for $25. And that's when I found out about information disparities and how it's important to maybe pay attention to your phone the Friday they drop a spoiler. Because Felidar Guardian wasn't spoiled. People literally went through the spoiler, realized this was a combo in about 5 minutes, and then Wizards had to do a very long mea culpa basically saying, we didn't realize this in the entire time we designed it, and we done goofed. And this got banned pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was just a few months. And that is why Saheeli Rai is in Kaladesh Remastered on Arena, and Felidar Guardian is just not.
Nope.
Because we're just not going to have the combo. It's why Felidar Guardian is not legal in Pioneer. You can play with Saheeli Rai, but we're just not going to play this innocuous-looking 4-mana 1/4.
It was funny because it was legal. It's the same thing with Modern, where they're trying to figure out what's really good and what's not. And very quickly, they're like, this is not good. We can't have Splinter Twin.
That did not work. So one more busted combo. Next card I just wanted to mention was Disallow. So Disallow is 1 blue-blue for an instant, counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. It is counterspell plus stifle, but for the cost of cancel. I just love this card. I probably overplay it. It's in all of my blue commander decks. Highly recommended. There's just nothing like stifling a planeswalker ultimate, but on a card where you can also counter spells, totally worth it.
Honestly, I wish they'd reprint it soon. It really is like we talk about how bad cancels are, right? Like, it should just be a counterspell that costs 2 blue, that costs blue-blue, but power level wise, cancel's probably a little better. But this is great. If they could have disallow in every single core set, I would be down. Like, I think it's a totally fair card. So
yeah, just one of my little favorites.
Yeah.
Next one, I want to read this one too because this is one of my favorites.
Go ahead.
Torrential Gear Hulk. So there was a cycle of 5 Gear Hulks that were all mythic rare artifact creature constructs, but the blue one, Torrential Gear Hulk, 4 blue-blue for a 5/6 with flash. And when it enters the battlefield, you can cast an instant card from your graveyard without paying its mana cost, and then you would exile it. So it's kind of like Snapcaster for an instant, except it casts it for you. And so when you have your 6-mana 5/6 flash that can cast whatever instant is in your graveyard, I mean, you can just do anything. The world is your oyster. I want to make this work in Historic now that it exists. I love this card. It's a huge, huge beater.
Oh, yeah. I think it'd be a lot more fun Historic. I actually played against a Historic deck against it recently in Historic in Arena, and it was miserable.
Perfect. Perfect.
Here's the thing. Snapcaster Mage dies. It's a dinky body. Torrential Gearhulk is like its bigger, swole brother who comes in, does the thing Snapcaster Mage does, and then still punches you in the face really hard, and you're like, this is unfair. I just need the dinky body.
So these are cards that were legal when Brawl first became a format. We played a lot of Brawl at my local store. I Torrential Gearhulked a lot of Disallows. It's like, well, he's got 6 mana open. He probably doesn't have a counterspell. He already played his Disallow. Yeah, it's miserable, but huge fan of it. I couldn't quite get it to go in Pioneer, but Historic might be my oyster.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say, the flip side of it was, when it was legal and standard, very obvious when it was, like, when someone just had 6 mana and went pass, you're like, even if you don't, I still have to respect that you have a Torrential Gearhulk, and it's, I hate it.
And there was nothing you could do. I mean, a lot of times, you'd play your Torrential Gearhulk, and you'd cast, like, Glimmer of Genius, which is a 4-mana spell that draws 2 cards and gets you 2 energy. So, if you're not countering something or doing something else, it's like, yeah, I'm still just gonna play it and draw a couple cards and then bash you with my 5-6 next turn.
So good. So moving on to one of my favorites, actually. War of Invention. Mm-hmm. War of Invention was X blue, blue, blue for an instant. It had Improvise, so you could reduce the cost if you tapped artifacts to help pay for the cost. And you search your library for an artifact card with converted mana cost X or less, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. I love this card because I am a degenerate, and I played artifact combo decks for a while in Modern, and this was a cornerstone of those. Whether it was Lantern, whether it was played in pre-Harclan Ironworks decks, I just love it. It's Court of Calling for artifacts, and who wouldn't want to play 4 copies of this card?
Yeah, the only difference from Court is obviously Improvise. You can't tap artifacts to pay for the blue, so you're paying blue, 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 but in artifact-heavy decks, they're generally not that color-intense anyway, and so you can probably work that out. This is a card that I loved when I saw it, and I played against plenty of your Modern artifact decks, and it was a nightmare just knowing that you were going to go get whatever you needed. Just a really, really cool card.
So it's really disappointing that, like, Urza, Lord High Artificer, which was printed in Modern Horizons, is just a better version of War of Invention. Like, you can't tutor, but the ability to just cast spells for free with your artifacts just makes it too good. Because it's just not interesting, but it's just sad because, like, I love War of Invention. I'd rather play War of Invention, but I can't deny how good Urza is.
Can you just play them together? Can you just then tap your artifacts for the blue as well and then improvise with other artifacts for War of Invention? Get your totally free War?
It's not the same. Okay. It's just not as good. I mean, I haven't tried Lantern yet with Urza, so I might have to do that.
That sounds in your wheelhouse. All right, the next one is Fatal Push. Fatal Push is a single black for an instant. It says destroy target creature if it has converted mana cost 2 or less, but it has Revolt, as we mentioned earlier. So if a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, you get to destroy a creature that has converted mana cost 4 or less. And this was, people talked about it like, this is Swords to Plowshares, basically. You know, it destroyed the stuff you needed to destroy early for a single mana, and even later, creatures with converted mana cost 4 or more, especially in older formats, that's like the entire suite of creatures. And a single black mana is all you need. Crack a fetch and then pop it off.
Of all the cards we're going to talk about today, this had the most impact since the moment it was released until even today. It's a staple. It essentially resuscitated black and Modern, and it also helped make it good in Legacy again. I can't understand enough. Like, it's one of those cards that's not ever going to get banned, but it would be a mistake if you're going to register a black deck that was not a combo deck in an Eternal format and not start with at least 3 Fatal Push.
Yeah, it's just a great design. Yeah. And it was weird that white had Path to Exile and red just has Lightning Bolt or whatever, and it's like, well, black's thing is supposed to be removal. Why don't they have a really good 1-mana removal spell? They just didn't, and Fatal Push definitely fits the bill.
And it's one of those things, the moment you play Fatal Push and then you play something like Heartless Act after, Heartless Act's really good. It's not Fatal Push, though. It just isn't. It's just a whole different world. Like, I would be surprised to see Heartless Act in a Modern deck, but I would be shocked if Fatal Push wasn't in a black Modern deck.
Yeah, makes sense. If it makes it into Jund, man, given what their suite of removal is like, you know it's got to be something.
Oh, yeah.
All right. This next one is a pet card of mine. I mean, Gonti, Lord of Luxury. 2BB for a 2/3 Aetherborn Rogue. He's legendary. He's got Death Touch. When he enters the battlefield, you can look at the top four cards of a target opponent's library, exile one of them face down, then put the rest on the bottom of that library in a random order. You can look at and cast that card for as long as it remains exiled and spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast that spell. I love playing with my opponent's cards, and this one did this amazing thing where it gave you the option to play the card later in the game. You can use any color mana, and you could do it even if Gonti had left play. So that's not how these cards normally worked. It was like, usually it's like your opponent's card was exiled with your card or something, and so if it left play, you didn't get to cast it, but no. This, and then followed by Thief of Sanity, gave you this option to just play it for the rest of the game. Plus, Gonti gives you a choice of four cards, so you have some really cool decisions to make about what you want to use. Plus, the body has Death Touch, so you're not only drawing the best of their top four cards that you can cast later using any color mana, but you're probably trading for a creature. Incredible.
I am annoyed every time you play it against me, but I respect it, because when I've played it, like I have it in my Xur deck, my Xur slide deck for EDH, and every time I'm like, I just want to keep blinking this. Like, I just want to keep stealing people's cards. It is so good, it's so annoying, but yeah, it's just fantastic. Like,
yeah, blinking Gonti just feels absolutely incredible. This is another card that I really like in cubes as well, and try to take very highly.
As much as Kaladesh Limited was kind of meh, it was fine. Like, the constructed format was a bit of a dumpster fire. It had a lot of great individual card designs that just kind of got overlooked because Wizards decided to play with fire and they lost.
That often happens when you play with fire. Smokey the Bear told me that once.
Yeah, if you don't listen to Smokey, you know, please have more faith in your government.
I thought it was Smokey the Bear. It could have just been like a random bear, I guess.
It's true. Who knows? But if the bears are talking to you, we should have a deeper conversation.
That might be my own issue more so than whether or not the bear is just wanting to prevent forest fires. All right. You got to talk about this next one, because this is just your alley all the way.
Yeah. So this one is a deep cut. This is like track 7 on the like second best album you've ever listened to by your artist. So this is Ovalchase Daredevil. It's 3 and a black for a 4/2 human pilot. Whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, you may return Ovalchase Daredevil from your graveyard to your hand. You're saying, Christian, why are we talking about this card? This was part of Vintage decks as of very recently. The reason why is because Vintage decks have a lot of artifacts. And also, what's a good land that's Vintage legal, that's kind of a pillar of the format, but has a big downside? Can you think of one of those?
Is it maybe one you tap to draw two cards and then discard three cards, possibly a bunch of Ovalchase Daredevils?
Yeah, the Tsar of Baghdad. So it turns out, if you literally can just draw two cards and then turns out if you draw two cards and then discard a bunch of cards that allow you to draw, you know, put those back in your hand so you can draw two more cards eventually. Pretty good. Pretty good. So it was really run in the decks called Paradoxical Outcome decks. This is another ridiculously powerful Kaladesh card that really only is shining in Vintage. It's 3 to blue for an instant. You return any number of target permanents to your hand and you draw that many cards. So it turns out if you play a bunch of free Moxen, Black Lotus, Soul Rings and stuff that generates mana and allows you to draw more cards, it's a pretty good foundation for a deck.
Yeah, tap all those for mana, return them to your hand with the mana floating, replay them all, and then go nuts. Yeah, pretty sweet. So just a weird thing. We'll put a deck list in show notes. All right, next one is another one of my favorites, Bomat Courier. So a single mana for a 1/1 artifact creature construct with haste. Whenever it attacks, you exile the top card of your library face down, and then you can pay a red and discard your hand and sacrifice Bomat Courier to put all cards exiled with it into their owner's hands. Now you might be saying, this is a 1/1 haste that dies to everything. What does this do? No. When you play it on turn 1, and you get in with it right away, and you exile a card under it, that's where it begins. Then you just keep attacking with it, you use spells from your hand to destroy your opponent's creatures, so you keep attacking with it. And then, when they've spent all their cards, you sacrifice this and you draw the 6 cards you've exiled underneath it, and then you win the game.
You said it more elegantly than I could have. I mean, I think I undervalued it for about a week when it first came out, and then I was killing that thing on sight. Like, it is...
Yeah.
It really filled a niche. I'm just shocked it's not played more in like modern. It just seems to be one of the coolest and best things you can do with red. It's drawing cards in a color that just wants to get rid of cards. Like, how good is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very fragile, so I get why you don't necessarily want to run it out there, but this is a cube staple now, and it's one of the cards that I absolutely chase after if I'm looking to draft a mono-red deck. Again, this is a card that, like, perfect fit in Vintage Cube, you know?
So, speaking of red cards that are absolutely ridiculously good, we have Chandra, Torch of Defiance. So, Chandra, this version of Chandra is 2 red-red for a Planeswalker Chandra that comes into play with 4 loyalty. It's first plus one. That's right. I said first plus one is exile the top card of your library. You may cast that card. If you don't, Chandra Torch of Defiance deals 2 damage to each opponent. It's second plus one. This is super wild. Add red-red to your mana pool. Its first minus ability is -3. Chandra Torch of Defiance deals 4 damage to target creature. Its ultimate is -7. You can emblem with... Whenever you cast a spell, this emblem deals 5 damage to target creature or player. Just absolute unit. Just amazing.
Yeah, this card's total house. First 4-ability Planeswalker since Jace the Mind Sculptor that was in any way reasonably playable. There was the, like, 7-mana Garrick, right? This one had 4 abilities, and you would use all 4 of the abilities.
Oh, yeah. In fact, when I played it in Standard, I used all 4 abilities. In fact, I sometimes needed to use all 4 abilities to win the game. But It was just great. It's one of those things I'm just surprised they haven't tried to do another 4-mana Planeswalker. Well, that doesn't have a static ability. Let's not go there. It was the first well-designed red Planeswalker in a very long time. Koth was really good, but it wasn't on the same level as Chandra.
Yeah, and Koth is kind of a mono-red deck Planeswalker, right? Like, cares about mountains, and so it's a little bit parasitic in that way. But you can just... play Chandra anywhere you feel like it. Super powerful. The impulsive draw feature, plus one, gets you card advantage or the mana advantage. It kills creatures. And that ultimate is real. And it doesn't take that long to get to it. I've definitely ultimated Chandra before. And when you cast a spell, lava axe your opponent or, like, you know, blow up their creature or planeswalker for 5 is pretty out of control. So just a great card. Something that I'm always trying to fit into decks that I'm brewing.
We're just going to be really quick about this one. This is just a sublimely ridiculous, dumb artifact. It's Aetherflux Reservoir. It's 4/4, obviously an artifact. Whenever you cast a spell, you gain 1 life for each spell you've cast this turn. And then you could pay not 10, not 20, not 40, but 50 life for Aetherflux Reservoir to deal 50 damage to any target.
Yeah, you just storm off and dome your opponent for 50. Out of control. I love any deck where this is a possible win condition. It's insane and glorious.
What's, like, the meme the kids are doing? Like, tired, Thassa's Oracle, wired, Aetherflux Reservoir as a storm combo. Yeah. Let's just try this as old people to force something onto the youths.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the decks. And there were, like, paradoxical outcome decks where... you would just be trying to basically draw your deck and cast all these little dinky things. And when you did so, you know, you're gaining all this life. So, yeah, we're going to return and replay our Ornithopters and our whatever the, like, 0-mana equipment shield was and just try to dome your opponent. So, hilarious and dumb. I think you nailed it.
I wouldn't be surprised this played a lot in, like, life gain EDH decks because that's actually a legitimate win condition at that point.
And it's a great mutually assured destruction thing. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to come take me out, I'm just going to 50 you. And then we're both out of the game. Next one is a card I really love the design of, Metallic Mimic. 2 mana for a 2/1 artifact creature shapeshifter. As it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type. And so Metallic Mimic is that type in addition to its other types. And it says each other creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. I love this for casual play. It can fill in gaps as, like, a kinda lord in any casual tribal deck. The difference is you have to play it before you play the other creatures of the type, so you get the +1/+1 counters. It's not quite there, but I'm just super, super glad it exists. So if you want to make a Minotaur deck or an Aetherborn deck or a Cat Monkey Bandar deck or a Brushwag deck, I mean, you can put this in the deck. Why not?
Yeah, it's great. It also just works well with the tribes that have shifted to, like, +1/+1 counters. Mm-hmm. So newer elves decks have a little more focus on +1/+1 counters. New Merfolk for sure, like anything in Ixalan onward, they're +1/+1 counter focused.
Wow, did I really say there were no Merfolk on Kaladesh and here's Metallic Mimic just staring me in the face? Wow. Brutal. All right, well, I'm just going to pretend that didn't happen. Okay, so next one. A deck that I played in Standard built around this card, Metalwork Colossus. Metalwork Colossus is an 11-mana 10-10 artifact creature construct. Sounds very castable, I know. It costs X less to cast, where X is the total converted mana cost of non-creature artifacts you control. And then you could sacrifice two artifacts and return it from your graveyard to your hand. So I would play a deck with Puzzle Knots, which were cards in this set, with Hedron Archive from the Battle for Zendikar block, which was 4 mana for an artifact that could tap for 2 colorless mana, or you could pay mana and sack it and draw 2 cards. But the point was, that cost 4, you could also tap it for an additional 2, so it made this thing really easy to cast. There were a lot of turns where you would sacrifice some of your dumb artifacts you didn't need, get some of these back from the graveyard, and just like dump 4 of them on the battlefield. It was just an amazingly fun deck to play.
It's one of those cards I kind of wish would enable more combos. Like, there's a tier 3 combo deck floating around on Historic right now that is mono. It's called Mono Brown because it's all artifacts.
Yes.
But one of the ways it wins is it repeatedly casts Metalwork Colossus with Aetherflux Reservoir.
Wow.
And kills your opponent that way. But yeah, it's like the good cards in Kaladesh. When I say good too, I mean the interesting cards in Kaladesh. There's a lot of depth to them, but they don't scream, you must play me because I'm the most broken thing you could do imaginable.
Sure. Well, now I have to build a Metalwork Colossus deck in Arena, so pretty stoked about that.
Let's talk about Paradox Engine. 5 mana for a legendary artifact. Whenever you cast a spell, untap all non-land permanents you control.
Yeah, so this is an infinite combo machine. All you have to do is cast a spell and untap your stuff, which maybe, you know, lets you draw stuff or cast new things. And the rare card that is banned in Commander, and probably a fairly good reason. I only used it in one deck where it was used very fairly, but it just, like, too many opportunities to be busted.
I played one deck with it. Precisely one deck with it that just generated infinite mana pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then I said, cool, like, this is dumb. This should be banned. And at least it was easy because when your opponent played it, you went, cool, I guess this game is over and we can play another one. But
yeah, it's generally not good when there are cards where when you play them, the correct response for your opponent is, are you doing anything infinite this turn? Where it's just like,
right.
It could be mana, it could be anything else. There's just no way to know because the card itself is so out of control.
Yeah. I'm surprised this hasn't been more of a combo engine in other formats. In fact, now I'm thinking about it. We talked about Urza Lord High Artificer earlier.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a combo with it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of artifacts. Tap them for blue. Cast a spell. Untap this.
Yeah, it seems pretty broken.
While you're doing that, I want to talk about a card that I would say my friends most closely identify with me from this set, and it's Panharmonicon. 4 mana for an artifact. Mm-hmm. It says, if an artifact or creature entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So you're basically doubling your enter the battlefield effects from artifacts and creatures. Doubling things is wonderful. It's my favorite. You can bet I tried this in all kinds of standard decks. I did play it in the Metalwork Colossus deck because some of those cards, you know, and Prophetic Prism enters and you draw a card. Yeah, I'd rather just draw 2. And of course, I have played this in numerous Commander decks. It's just the best. Saffron Olive has basically, like, made his existence on the existence of Panharmonica.
Its closest analog is Rings of Brighthearth, which it's not exactly the same. You have to pay mana for Rings of Brighthearth for activated abilities, but it's an artifact that copies activated abilities. It's great. Like, it's one of those cards that I hope they print it to death in, like, Commander decks and such because it really is a cool effect and everyone should have a copy of it, honestly. I remember a conversation we had when they banned Feldar Guardian and you said it was dumb because they should have banned Saheeli Rai because you couldn't double your triggers in your Panharmonicon deck Feldar Guardian, and that was a crime. And I agree with that. They should have banned Saheeli.
Yeah, they're never going to ban the Mythic if they can ban the Uncommon, but I did play a Panharmonicon base deck that was playing Feldar Guardian to like blink multiple things and just get a ton of Enter the Battlefield triggers and Gear Hulks, and it was the best, and I'm sad. But yeah. This is an effect that they've done on a couple of different things recently. So since Panharmonicon, most recently Ancient Green Warden in Zendikar Rising,
yeah.
Which has the same text except for lands entering the battlefield. Yerok the Desecrated did the same thing for death triggers. So did Tesa Karlov from the recent Ravnica block. And then my favorite was Naban, Dean of Iteration, where they were kind of testing out, like, do we want to do a half measure? And it was only wizards entering the battlefield. You get double wizard triggers, but so all of these cards are kind of referred to casually as like, oh, it's a Panharmonicon 4X.
It's great, honestly. Like, I have one in my Zer deck because I want to double enter the battlefield
triggers. Yeah, why not?
It's just fantastic. Let's talk about another combo piece. Because Kaladesh, let me tell you, Kaladesh block and combo piece go together like almond butter and pie, because peanut butter and pie would be mirrored, and that was a lot of combo too. Scrap Trawler was another broken combo piece from Aether Vault. It's three colorless for an artifact creature construct. It's a 3/2. Whenever Scrap Trawler or another artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return to your hand target artifact card in your graveyard with lesser converted mana cost. Listeners, you're thinking, why is this a combo piece exactly? It just seems like a value engine. So there's a card in Modern called, what was in Modern, it's called Karklan Ironworks. And whenever you sacrifice an artifact to Karklan Ironworks, you generate a 2 colorless mana. So turns out, this is really complicated. So it turns out you could create infinite loop with Scrap Trawler, Mirror Retriever, Mox Opal, and I think that was it. You might have needed another artifact. I think you needed a 1-mana egg or something. But you could set up an infinite combo that couldn't really be interacted with and win the game.
Yeah, that was the problem and the reason it got banned. You couldn't interact with it because it was like using a between step that didn't make sense to any player who was not like had not read the articles about it, basically. And so, cool card though.
Oh, great! Yeah. That was fantastic. But I love
Karklan Ironworks with KCI, as it was called, had to go for this reason.
I was a dummy, and I should have played this like 6 months before it got banned, because it was really complicated. I tried it once, and I was like, I don't get it. This is too much. And then by the time I was like, I should pick up and get this, it was...
Yeah.
It was just...
So the extremely complicated, convoluted, uninteractable deck is just very Christian, though, so I'm glad at least you got it a little bit.
Oh, yeah. It was funny, because it was one of those things. I did it again when I forgot what they had banned recently. And it was Oko. I took it to a Tuesday night Modern at my local shop because the way paper ban releases work for people who haven't played paper, like us, in quite a while, is there's a lag with the banned restricted list. So it's the Friday after they ban it. And I took KCI to the Modern tournament, and people were joking like, will someone bring KCI? And I was like, I did, because I want a combo with this. And my exacerbated final round opponent, who had also played it previously but didn't want to play it, wasn't going to play it again, helped coach me to kill him. It was great. He was like, yeah, so I think you win here because you engineered explosives, my permanents. And I'm like, oh, you're right, I do win. And he was a happy kid.
My goodness, Christian. Let's move on to a card that is broken for other reasons, Walking Ballista. So Walking Ballista is XX for a 0/0 artifact creature construct. It enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. So as you'd expect, if you pay 2 mana, you get 1 +1/+1 counter. You can pay 4 at any time to put a +1/+1 counter on it. And you can also remove a +1/+1 counter from it to deal 1 damage to any target. So this is one of the win conditions in my Modern Abzan Devoted Druid deck, certainly. But it is an infinite combo with Heliod, the recent white god, and therefore it was banned in Pioneer, which means this is another card that is not in Kaladesh Remastered, so not on Arena.
Yeah, so I'm really salty this wasn't in Kaladesh Remastered, because I played a God Pharaoh's Gift deck. And part of that was you needed 0 mana creatures to trigger your Gates of the Afterlife, so you could fill your graveyard to find the God Pharaoh's Gift real quick. And Walking Ballista was one of those creatures that now I have to figure out an alternative for, because it's too good. Thanks, Wizards. You just had to make good cards that had to follow Walking Ballista. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's obviously very good. You know, it's a combo piece in a bunch of different formats, but it's also just very efficient. And people used to play cards like Hangerback Walker, and then they were like, I guess I could just play Walking Ballista now. Yeah, very powerful, very cool card. A lot of flexibility. One more card I wanted to talk about, actually a set of cards, is the enemy-colored fast lands. So these were all in Kaladesh. They all tap for one of two colors of mana, and they enter the battlefield tapped unless you control two or fewer other lands. So if you're playing them on turn one, two, or three, basically they're entering the battlefield untapped. Really cool cards. Glad to have them on Arena. They'll be a nice addition to Historic, necessary for some of those decks where like you really need the untapped mana early and you don't care that much about it later.
Yeah, there's been a clamor because this was a continuation of the cycle from Scars of Mirrodin, and the clamor is to reprint the Scars of Mirrodin ones because there are certain ones, actually the ones you don't even you think wouldn't be the expensive ones, but it's the black based ones that are the most more expensive ones because they're played in different modern decks as kind of like better fixing. So like I'm thinking specifically of Blackleaf Cliffs. It's the black red one. It's the most expensive.
Yep. So cool to have these. Pretty stoked about that. So overall impressions of the Kaladesh block in general?
Glad we don't play it anymore.
Yeah. I will say the original limited environments were fine. Not super exciting. You know, as far as the Kaladesh remastered limited environment, I'm kind of on the Amonkhet remastered thing where it's a little bit of a disappointment, but I don't really know what I was expecting from these sets. I keep drafting these decks that I think are really cool, and then I'm losing to like red-black decks that are just all removal. That's the one that I feel like I lose to the most. Some of the decks that I expected to be better, especially the green-based decks that are a lot of power and toughness, have just not performed 4 or 5 wins, but I have yet to hit that 7-win threshold, so only okay.
So we're a nostalgia podcast in a nutshell, and I think one of the problems is if you have to remember everything, when you have to actually face it, you realize that what you thought was actually pretty good at the time was just kind of thoroughly average in retrospect. In Kaladesh fits the bill. I remember talking about Kaladesh after it was released and Aether being like, you know, maybe this isn't the top third of like the best draft formats of all time, right? Like, this is fun. I like artifacts, and having to go back to it, I'm like, not really. No. I don't know. It's fine. Like, there's nothing crazy about it. Like,
no, we've been very spoiled in recent years as well with really, really strong draftable sets. This is coming after the Shadows over Innistrad block, which you know, combined with Eldritch Moon and was fine, but not that impressive. And that was coming after Battle for Zendikar block, where Battle for Zendikar was a pretty bad draft format with a totally unplayable color. I loved Oath of the Gatewatch, but I was like the only person who did, and so I think it was a breath of fresh air from those. But then it was followed by Amonkhet Hour, which was better, Ixalan, which was okay, and then we started going like hit after hit after hit, from, you know, Dominaria to the Ravnica block to great core sets in 2020 and 2021. You know, this was one of the last kind of like subpar draft environments.
I wonder if we're going to look back in a few years, too, and some of these, like, I think Dominaria is a consensus all-timer. I think no one will dispute that. But I'm wondering if things like Throne, where I enjoyed Throne, but, like, will I enjoy it enough to replay it? I don't know. Probably not. Like, it's not Innistrad. Would I want to go back and play it? Probably not. Like, I don't know. Like, I think the thing is, the big problem with Magic as a product, as a game, right, is we need the dopamine hit, and we also need novelty. I think R&D is really good at giving us an initial novelty hit when we learn a format and we learn the ins and outs of it. But when we go and revisit it, I don't think a lot of it's worth revisiting. I think that's part of the problem. Innistrad's great because it's super deep. Same with Rise of the Eldrazi. Same with if you go back to Time Spiral. Like, I'm really looking forward to Time Spiral Remastered because that was a really deep, fantastic, classic draft set. You get outside of that initial reaction and you have a deep, great draft format that like Dominaria will.
Well, I think the thing you do is you just keep trying to make good draft sets, and people will enjoy them while they're out. And if they don't want to go back to them, they don't go back to them. And, you know, they'll just appear on the online services a little less. So this one was okay. It was just okay.
Yeah, good talk.
All right. Well, before we go, I just wanted to mention the other set that has come out very recently, Commander Legends. So a set that I have certainly not been able to draft because I play Arena, and in a normal world, which we are not in, I play in paper. I'm absolutely looking forward to drafting it in paper, but really cool idea for a product. You draft like you would normally draft, but you draft legendary creatures, you draft a commander, and then you make a 60-card commander deck out of the packs you draft and play a game of commander. I like these draft experiment sets. Conspiracy sets and Battle Bond and even Unstable was kind of this way, right? I'm really glad that they're trying these new things, and I really hope that everybody stays well and gets vaccinated so my friends and I can sit down at an actual table and draft a box of this in 2024.
I might pull the trigger and try it out on Magic Online, mm-hmm. because it's one of those things that I will not play a paper draft. As you said, it's going to be probably at least a year and a half before I could play a physical version of this. But I would love to try it now. It looks really fun. I heard it's grindy, which is even better. Because I'll probably want to stop playing after 2 hours, but it looks interesting. And I don't know, like, you know, they've really done well when they've had to think outside the box. And I will immediately do a Battle Bond draft with you. Yeah. Wherever it's being played, like, I'll immediately jump into a conspiracy cube or a conspiracy draft, because that's just incredibly fun. And yeah, like, more multiplayer draft stuff. Let's do it.
I forgot to mention mystery boosters as part of that.
Oh, yeah, mystery boosters too. Yeah.
You know, same kind of concept. So this apparently was another of Gavin Verhey's babies. So he's really doing some good work, kind of cranking stuff out here. Looking forward to trying it. If y'all have tried it, you know, please shoot us a tweet. You know, thanks as always for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter to tweet all your Commander Legends or Kaladesh Remastered questions and jokes at our handle, at MemoryJarMTG. We would, as always, love your feedback, and tell us what cards you want to remember.
Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at @CMYKCompany. That's company with a K. And until next time, stay healthy, stay safe, wash your hands, and hope you have enough energy to actually activate a World of Virtuoso. Thank you all.